You're wondering whether that's professional negligence or just bad luck, or perhaps your employer calls a restructure that feels more like redundancy roulette. From faulty gadgets to breached contracts and missold policies, I'll give you the route map here on the LBC Legal Hour.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock. Rescue teams say the body of a girl has been pulled from the River Thames in Kent. Search involving police and the Lifeboat Institute began on Friday afternoon after two children were seen in the water near Gravesend. A boy who was rescued remains in a stable condition in hospital. President Trump's defence secretary has reassured allies in the Indo-Pacific region they won't be left to face increasing military and economic pressure from China alone. Pete Hegseth has also told a security conference in Singapore Beijing is rehearsing for a potential invasion of Taiwan. The foreign policy expert Asher Castleberry has been telling LBC any potential invasion would have wide-ranging impacts.
It would be extremely devastating for the United States and the rest of the world as far as China being able to take over Taiwan, especially when it comes to the technological issues as well as economics and other geopolitical issues too. It will also increase the battlefield confidence of them to go into other parts of the Indo-Pacific because of the fact that they have invaded successfully Taiwan.
Hamas has yet to comment on Israel's confirmation its leader in Gaza has been killed. The IDF says it's now certain Mohammed Sinwar died after a targeted strike at a hospital site on the 13th of May. LBC understands the government is working with Washington following the latest tariffs announcement for steel and aluminium. Donald Trump says he will double taxes on the metal imports from Wednesday. The UK agreed a deal with the United States last month to bring levies on them down to zero, but it's yet to come into force. White House correspondent for Politico, Daniel Lipman, has been telling LBC some former Trump supporters are now turning on him because of tariffs.
Trump likes tariffs because he wants to bring back American manufacturing, and his voters, many of them like tariffs as well because they want to get those jobs in manufacturing. And so it's a gift back to his base, but then there's also major parts of his base that are saying, hey, I didn't vote for much higher prices. I wanted more targeted use of tariffs, not these overarching economy-wide tariffs.
Rescuers say the body of a British hiker who's been missing in northern Italy for 5 months has been found. Aziz Ziryat has been in the Dolomites with a friend whose death was confirmed in January. And in tennis this evening at the French Open, Cameron Norrie has beaten Jacob Fernley in their all-British meeting. He won in straight sets to reach the fourth round. LBC weather, any remaining rain will clear to the east, leaving a dry and settled night for most areas. Cloudy in the west, with showers spreading across Northern Ireland and Scotland by dawn. We'll see a low of 8 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
The advice offered in this hour is for guidance only. You should always seek your own independent legal and financial opinion. This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. The Legal Hour with Daniel Barnett.
It's 9.03. Welcome to the LBC Legal Hour with me, Barrister Daniel Barnett. This is your weekly chance to get answers to any legal question that you want. We've got lots of calls coming in. 03456060973. Gabriel, I'll be with you in just a moment. First of all, a reminder, if you haven't listened to a while, to the rules of the LBC Legal Hour. Rule number one, please do keep your questions short. It's a sign of respect to the people who follow you in the queue, because it's always quite a long queue to get through. If the people before you had waffled, then you might not have got on. Show that same respect to the people who follow you, please. Number two, no questions about parking tickets, please, because they're super boring. Number three, only one question involving a car, because once we get one question involving a car, everyone phones up about their cars and it becomes the car show, not the Legal Hour. Nigel, you're in the queue with a car question. You're the call we'll be taking. If you've got a question about a car, call in next week again. Gabriel in Maidenhead, how are you?
Very well, Daniel. Nice to speak to you. Big fan, and my wife runs a HR business and you're a point of reference all the time.
Oh, that's nice to hear. How can I help you?
So very quickly, 1 year ago, May last year, we bought a laptop from a famous retailer that also sells online. About February, my son was, it was for my son. He started having problems. We contacted the retailers. It had a manufacturer's warranty, and they pointed us to the manufacturer. We sent the laptop away in March, and we're still waiting to have a laptop back, basically. Lots of reasons why an excuse is given, and moving depot, parts being ordered. But it's more than 2 months. Our son doesn't have a laptop for school. We still don't really know when it's going to come back. Just wanted to know where I stand with the manufacturer and or the retailer who we contracted with. All I want is just to have a laptop for my son to...
Got it. Gabriel, sorry, just talk me through the timeline again. When did you buy it?
Yeah. May 2024. At the end of May 2024, we purchased the laptop.
And it went wrong in February, and you took it in March.
Yes, probably in February 2025. Sent it in March under the one-year manufacturer's warranty. Yeah.
What was the reason for the month's delay sending it in?
End of February, you contact the manufacturer. It's time for them to send you a courier to collect. So we're just waiting for the manufacturer. They're based in, their operations are for repairs all centralised in Bulgaria, I'm guessing, somewhere in Eastern Europe.
Okay, so here's the position. You've got two potential claims here. Claim number one is against the retailer. Claim number two is against the manufacturer. Let's talk about the claim against the retailer first. They've got to sell you a computer that's fit for purpose, a computer that goes wrong within, where are we? You bought it in May, went wrong in February, that's 9 months. A computer that goes wrong within 9 months, I'm assuming it was a new computer, Gabriel.
Yes, correct.
Yep. And just tell me roughly how much did you spend?
About £350.
£350?
Yeah, approximately, yeah.
And what went wrong with it? Just tell me that in one sentence.
Screen glitching, so just coming on and off at one point.
Okay. Now, that of course, can be a product of dropping the computer. I know, I've got a daughter. Is that a possible explanation? Which isn't covered by the
possible
warranty?
I haven't had any issues with the manufacturer coming back saying it's something that's not covered by the warranty.
Okay,
it's
fine.
Purely their time to getting it fixed and changing depots, changing suppliers, etc. There hasn't been any challenge in relation to the repair itself.
Understood. And just tell me this, don't identify them, but is the manufacturer the same as the retailer? Did you buy it from a manufacturer's...
No.
Okay.
No.
So you've got two potential claims here. The first is against the retailer who has to sell you a computer of satisfactory quality. And assuming it wasn't dropped by your son, a screen that glitches and goes wrong within 9 months is not of satisfactory quality. So you've got a claim against them. You don't have to give them the opportunity to repair it if you can prove, 9 months on, that it was wrong at the point of sale. But the difficulty is that there's only a presumption it was wrong at the point of sale for the first 6 months. After the first 6 months, there's a presumption that it wasn't wrong at the point of sale, it's gone wrong subsequently. And in that situation, you do have to give them the opportunity to repair or replace at their option. Now, you haven't yet given them the opportunity to repair it. That's why I asked you if the manufacturer is the same as the retailer. You've given them...
Could I... just give you a nuance to that.
Yep.
We went directly to them and they instructed us through themselves to go directly to the manufacturer. This is the setup that they have. So they wouldn't repair it themselves anyway. The setup that they have is
perfect.
With this one, you need to go to the manufacturer directly, and they sent us on to them and started that process.
Perfect. Okay, good. So you have a claim against them because when these sorts of repairs have to be done, they've got to be done within a reasonable time. Now, I don't know whether a reasonable time to fix or replace a screen is 1 week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, but it ain't 2 months. 2 months is obviously far too long. So you have a claim here against both the retailer and against the manufacturer for taking too long to deal with your repair. Now, I'm going to tell you that you've got a strong case here, Gabriel. I'm also going to tell you a real problem, which is that if you want to go to court and sue them, it's going to take the best part of 6 to 12 months, which doesn't help because that's the delay inherent in our underfunded court systems. What you can do is send them a letter, and this is what I would do. I'd send them a letter or an email. Email is fine, saying that if they don't replace the laptop or return it working within 1 week, you're going to go and buy a new one and charge them for the extra cost. Now, of course, what you're getting is a brand new laptop, whereas you've got rid of one that's 9 months old. So you've had some slight element of betterment, and you have to give some slight amount of credit off the new computer price. It's also got to be a computer of similar quality, so you can't go and buy a £2,000 laptop to replace the broken £300 laptop. But you've got a rock-solid claim here. The one thing you've got to do is give them a week in writing and use the phrase that time is of the essence to replace the computer or return the working computer. One other possibility, Gabriel, is a credit card claim. Did you pay by credit card for this?
I think we played by our company debit card. We're going to get a credit card from now on. We know that that's probably a mistake.
Okay. Debit card, you get 120 days to bring a claim against your bank, or bring a chargeback claim from the breach of contract, from the date that you paid, rather. So you're not going to have a claim under a debit card, I'm afraid. And it's complicated by the fact you paid on a corporate card, not a personal card. So we're not going to go down that route. But you do have claims here against the retailer and the the repairer. Okay, Gabriel.
Thanks for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
It's 9:10. Interesting call. Now, I said that we get one call about cars a show, and here it is. I hope it's exciting. Nigel in Barnet. Good evening.
Hello, Daniel. Hi. I don't know about exciting, but we're still in a little state of shock because we went today and we bought a second-hand car, 2007 Golf, that was advertised on a social media marketplace. And the description was very, very good. It matched what we wanted, and we went to get it. As lay people, we didn't know what to look for, but the car seemed very good. We paid £900 with our personal debit card and took the car away.
Was this from a trader or a private seller?
A private seller.
Okay.
And when we got back, we got a mechanic to have a look at it. He said it's not just a simple plugs or coil. It's a major engine fault.
Sorry, what's not a simple plugs or coil?
The advert said there was a minor misfire present, believed to be due to spark plugs or ignition coils. Straightforward and inexpensive fix. But the mechanic said, no, it's a lot more than that.
Okay, did the advert say straightforward and inexpensive fix, or did you read that into it?
No, he said straightforward and inexpensive fix. He also said all electrics and functions working as they should, but none of the central locking works. And he said that he bought it 2 months ago. It was just standing on his driveway. But 2 weeks ago, he got an MOT from a company that don't do things slowly, don't fit slowly. And we understood from his brother that he is a fully trained mechanic who works at a particular branch that issued the MOT certificate. And we don't believe, our mechanic said that no, this car could not have passed an MOT 13 days ago in this situation.
Okay, so you have a potential fraudulent seller here, certainly someone who's done something fraudulent. Have you received a copy of the MOT certificate?
Yes, we've got it. Okay. He didn't give us the original. We've downloaded it from the government website.
Right, so it has been properly MOT'd. It's just that it's been properly MOT'd by a registered tester.
Yes. Which happens to be the place where he works as a train mechanic.
Yep. So probably, or you believe that someone ticked the boxes on the sly when they shouldn't have done?
Yes, because our mechanic said that it couldn't possibly have passed an MOT.
Yep, all right. So here are the things you can do. First of all, because this was a private sale, and I'm just pausing one moment, could this have been actually a trade sale because this guy works at a garage but masquerading as a private sale?
His younger brother, who was on the phone to him while we were there, said that his brother and a friend were trying to buy and sell vehicles privately for themselves. This was a little business which they were setting up.
Right, so it does sound like a trade sale. It's a really important difference. I'll tell you why. Because if it's a trade sale, if they're in business selling cars, then the Consumer Rights Act says the car has to be of satisfactory quality when it's sold to you. If it's a private sale, that term about it being of satisfactory quality doesn't apply.
Right.
So it's an important difference. But If they said this is a straightforward and inexpensive fix, and it wasn't, you've got them for breach of contract anyway, because that would have become a term of the contract. It's got to correspond with what was said to you. So you've got a claim against the seller. The real question is, are you ever going to be able to get any money out of him? Because if he's as dodgy as you're suggesting, yeah, you might struggle to get the money. Now, here's what I'd do. First of all, sorry, you might have told me this. Did you pay by credit card?
No, debit card.
Debit card. All right. First thing I would do is, one other question, what date did you buy it?
Today, this afternoon at 2 o'clock.
Oh, you've literally bought it today? Okay.
Yes.
Have you contacted him yet and complained?
Yes, and he said, sorry to hear that. They didn't know about any of the faults, and good luck.
Fine. Did you sign anything saying sold as seen?
No.
Good.
He said it was sold as seen.
He said that to you before the sale or after the sale?
No, not before the sale. No, afterwards.
He said that when you complained?
Yes.
Okay, that's of no legal effect whatsoever. You have a claim against him. I suspect that it's not going to be worth suing him because it'll make you wait a year and probably not pay any judgment, is my gut right. feeling.
Yeah.
How much is it going to cost to actually repair this car?
We've had a quote of £600 just for labour, but then there's all the parts and the new water pump and other things.
Right, and you paid £900 for it.
Yes, we did. Yes.
So essentially, it's salvage.
It is salvage. Yes.
And do you have any sense as to the salvage value?
Sorry, beg your pardon.
Do you have any sense as to the salvage value?
No, we don't. No. Not at
okay.
all.
We're not. No. Yeah. Let's say the salvage value is £200. You've got a claim for £700, the difference between the salvage value and what you actually paid for it. You've got several options here. Number one is you sue this guy, but as I say, my gut feeling is you're never going to see the money. Much better option is option number two, which is you make a chargeback claim against your bank, which you can do within 120 days. You've got 119
right.
left.
Yeah.
And you just contact your bank, say you want to make a chargeback claim, and you say that the seller is in breach of contract by selling me a car that didn't correspond with its description, the description being that it's a straightforward fix and an inexpensive fix. You're going to have a letter from the mechanic and quotes from the mechanic saying it's going to cost £600 for labour and however much the parts are.
Yes.
That's absolutely crucial. And did he actually say straightforward fix verbally or in the advert?
It was in the advert.
Perfect. Fantastic. Send that to the bank. Send the cost of the quote to the bank. And I suspect the bank will repay your money because it's a clear-cut case of breach of contract.
And what happens to the car? Do we keep that or
The amount you'll get from the bank is that what you paid, £900 plus less the salvage value. So you'll get, say, £700 from the bank and you sell the car off for scrappage and get the £200 from that.
I understand. That's great.
Okay. Ian, that's a nice point. Ian has just texted in, if you paid by credit card, it sounds like it went through a card machine at a garage because a private seller wouldn't have had a card machine.
We did a bank transfer through the debit card.
How does that work?
We just gave him the details.
Of
our card.
Of your card. So he's...
The £900 was transferred to his account.
No, you either gave him your bank details or you gave him your card details. One's a bank transfer, one's a card payment.
He gave us his bank details and we paid that bank account.
Ah, right. So that wasn't a debit card payment. You haven't got debit card protection. You won't get anything out of the bank, I'm afraid. The bank's not going to be liable. Your only option is to sue him. So you can email him. You can make the points I've said. I suspect you're going to have to fight really hard to get that money, Nigel. I'm sorry.
We suspect. I mean, if we told him that.
Sorry, do you mean his employer?
Yes.
Yes. You can, but what are you going to get out of that?
All right. Okay. So we have to think about, yeah.
Thank you, Nigel.
Thank you very much indeed.
All right. Yep. Thanks so much for the call. You're listening to the LBC Legal Hour. I'm Barrister Daniel Barnett. Keep your calls coming in on 0345 60 60 973.
LBC.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips?
Your best bet is to head to BetVictor.
Why's that?
They've got more features than you can shake a stick at. They've got cash out, they've got in-play football, racing, tennis, all your favourite sports. They've got the best odds guaranteed on racing, and then there's the Bet Builder. And of course, you've got the lucky dip. Blimey, dip! I've got to go, fella. It's Nacho Night at Casa Rednap. And holy moly, I forgot the guacamole. Ay, caramba.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet at BetVictor. 18 plus, terms and conditions apply, gambleaware.org.
Here, Sandra, listen to this email. Felicitations and unalloyed joy to you. Could you help with a small inconvenience? I possess $32 million in an account belonging to my father, the Prince. We need an honest person to bank this amount for us. We're quits in, babe.
Some things are too good to be true. The Specsavers Too Good deal isn't. Get two pairs of glasses for £70. Include single vision lenses to the same prescription. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
Quits in!
The Legal Hour with Daniel Barnett on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's the LBC Legal Hour with me, barrister Daniel Barnett. The time is 9:20. 0345 6060 973. We've had our car question of the week, so any questions except those on cars or parking fines, please. It's Sam in Wimbledon. Sam, good evening.
Good evening. First time on the show. I'm hoping you can help me out.
Welcome.
I have a question about copyright and image usage. In 2022, I did a photo shoot for an agency working for a very well-known brewery. As far as I was aware, it was for their digital social media. There was no discussion of it being used elsewhere. And it is now being displayed on billboards around the UK. Currently, it's out there without any contract being signed or any usage being paid to me. Since that shoot, I've done a second shoot for them in 2024, where I had actually learned about licensing and usage and provided a quote for usage out of home on billboards, and is in the tens of thousands of pounds, and they declined to go forward. And they've now used the old images from 2022 again on their billboard campaign.
Okay, did you have any written contract from that first shoot?
Nothing was written. The only indication of any mention of usage was in the first email, where they said fee, X hundred of pounds, and in brackets, with complete usage. But I never acknowledged that or agreed or gave any indication of usage on invoices or signed any contracts.
Okay, you're completely and utterly stuffed, I'm afraid, Sam.
Ugh.
And I suspect you knew that?
No, actually I didn't.
Okay, right, so here's the legal position. The photographer owns all rights in photographs unless they allow somebody else to have those rights. So if you sign a contract or offer a contract that says you can have both digital rights and billboard rights and they say, no, don't want to pay for it, then they don't get those rights. If they pay for it, they get those rights. What happened here is they said to you, we want all the rights, and you went ahead, took the photos, paid the money without ever saying, no, you can't have all the rights. The contract term agreed there was that they could have all the rights, because there's something known legally as battle of the forms, which is where people are sending emails back and forth to each other with slightly different terms or understandings. It's always the most recent one that trumps the others, earlier ones. And if you don't say, no, I don't agree that, you're deemed to have agreed it when you do the work and take the money.
So the actual terms of with complete usage is enough?
Yes.
Despite me not acknowledging or saying yes, but doing the work is enough to say,
exactly,
that's all yours then?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Sorry, Sam.
That's all right. No worries. Thank you anyway.
All right. Thank you so much. And thank you for calling into LBC.
Thanks for having me.
9:22, it's the LBC Legal Hour. Shiloh, now I remember that name. Shiloh, you called me a few weeks ago. You were illustrating a book, or you'd written a book and you were publishing it?
That's correct. So it's a success story I have to share with you.
Okay, just pausing a second, Shiloh. Sorry, it's just coming back to me. You're 12 years old, aren't you?
Yes, that's correct.
Yes, and you've written a book, and we actually gave you a little bit of a shout-out about the book title last time.
Yes, that's correct. And thank you for that.
How's it going? How's the sales going?
So they're quite slow now. I mean, that day they did quite peak, but since then they've been quite slow. But the reason I'm calling you is because I want to share a success story. So after that, and then I also spoke to Dean the following week.
Dean Dunham of the Consumer Hour?
Yes.
Excellent.
Dean Dunham of the Consumer Hour. And so after many emails back and forth with them, they finally accepted responsibility. And then they said, well, they still won't give me compensation, but I managed to get to the head. And the head said he'll personally ensure that the book is printed right up to date, so with the correct copy.
Oh, that's fantastic. Because what was happening, Shiloh, I'm just going to pause because some listeners might not have heard the call a few weeks ago. What was happening is that you'd uploaded the book to Amazon, you then uploaded some amendments, but Amazon was still selling the original version and hadn't incorporated your amendments. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. Yes.
So it's all fixed now?
Yes, and I'd like to thank you and all the callers who texted in and also bought my book as well. And then I've also published another book, so that's the second one, and I'm waiting for that.
Goodness, what's that on?
So that one's The Crazy Fruit Bunch, the same series, The Portal Traveller.
Well, fantastic, Shiloh. Congratulations. How many did you sell? Do you mind me asking?
Thank you. I think I've only sold about 15 since it was published, and that was in April the 4th.
Okay. Well, fingers crossed that you sell a few more, and just absolute respect for you because you've done an incredible thing, and your mum and dad must be so proud of you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for calling in and letting me know and giving me the update.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure speaking to you, and also thank you for all your help.
You're very welcome, and good luck for the future. Thank you, Shiloh. Wow. I remember this call a few weeks ago, and he was incredible. He'd written a children's book, got it uploaded onto Amazon, and was selling it, which is, for a 12-year-old, that's absolutely incredible. Well done, Shiloh. It's 9:25. This is the LBC Legal Hour. I'm Barrister Daniel Barnett. Let's go to Mark in Croydon. Mark, good evening.
Oh, hello there. I just wanted to talk to you about... my vehicle was parked in a car park and it was hit by another vehicle, and the person failed to stop or leave any of their details. But fortunately for me, it was all recorded on my webcam in my car, and I was able to give my insurance company all the details, and they traced the driver and managed to pay my £2,500 worth of damage to my car. But I wanted to prosecute the lady that hit my car for the loss of earnings, from my loss of earnings, because I was absent from work for 5 days while my car was being repaired. But the insurance company, my own and her insurance company, won't provide me with her details. So therefore, I can't make a claim against her. And I did go to the Metropolitan Police, and they also decided not to prosecute her for failing to stop at the accident.
Okay, so have you got a solicitor involved, Mark? Because a solicitor could get these details.
I haven't, no, because I've tried to represent myself.
Okay, yeah, you can't compel the insurance company to give you the insurance details, but what you can do is if the insurance company refuses to do so, and I'm talking about the other side's insurance company, the driver's insurance company, you can go to court and get an order for something called substituted service, which means that you can serve the claim form on the insurance company rather than on the driver. It's not... Yeah, it's hassle, but that's what you're going to have to do. But you might also want to think about getting a solicitor involved because they'll be able to get the details fairly easily.
But one piece of legal advice I did get, they just said to me it's going to cost like lots of money for you to proceed with this.
If it's a small claim, is your loss of earnings more or less than £1,000?
Around about that.
Okay, if it's more than £1,000, then you'll get some costs back if you instruct a solicitor. If it's less than £1,000, you won't get any legal costs back, which means you are better off doing it yourself.
Right, but then, I was still surprised that the police didn't want to prosecute someone for failing to stop, which is, meant to be an endorsable offence. And they just said just because of the value of the claim, they've decided not to progress that,
Yeah. Yeah, it's frustrating when the police don't prosecute every single offence that ever happens in the world. But, if you want to pay more taxes, Mark, maybe they would.
Yeah.
That's the dilemma we all face.
I appreciate your help.
Thank you. All right, Mark, I appreciate your call. Thank you so much for calling in. Lots of text about Shiloh. How old was Shiloh? Did they have an appropriate adult next to them? Yes, we always make sure here on LBC that they haven't... appropriate adult, and there's consent from an adult to that phone call. That was all taken care of behind the scenes, you'll be glad to know. It's time for the LBC Legal Hour quiz. You know what to do here. What I'd like you to do, please, is send a WhatsApp voice note to 0345 6060973 with the answer to the question that I'm about to ask you. Make sure you say your name and where you're from in your WhatsApp voice note, because without that, we won't be able to give you a shout out. Send that voice note, as I say, to 0345 6060973 with your answer to this question. How many days do you have after the birth of a child to register that birth in England and Wales? How many days do you have after the birth of a child to register that birth in England and Wales? WhatsApp voice note to 0345 6060973. And in just a moment, you will get the answer. We'll deal with lots more questions. We've got Matthew coming up in just a moment. There's a few free lines if you want to call in. 0345 6060973. Answer the quiz after the 9:30 news headlines with Tim Daly.
Hamas has yet to comment on Israel's confirmation its leader in Gaza has been killed. The IDF says it's now certain Mohammed Sinwar died after a targeted strike at a hospital on the 13th of May. A woman in her 20s has been stabbed to death in South London. Police say a man in his 30s, who was taken to hospital with minor injuries, has been arrested on the suspicion of murder after the killing in Croydon. And LBC understands the government's working with Washington following the latest tariffs announcements on steel and aluminium. Donald Trump says he will double taxes on the metal imports from Wednesday. LBC weather: any remaining rain will clear to the east, leaving a dry and settled night for most parts of the UK. Cloudy in the west, with showers spreading across Northern Ireland and Scotland by dawn. We'll see a low of 8 degrees.
LBC.
At EDF, we don't just encourage you to use less electricity, we actually reward you for it. That's why, when you use less during peak times on weekdays, we give you free electricity on Sundays. How you use it is up to you. EDF. Change is in our power. Households who reduce their weekday peak electricity usage by 50% can earn up to 16 hours of free electricity per week, subject to fair usage. For all T's and C's, visit edfenergy.com/r-power.
I've had a few. Jimmy was my first. He was gorgeous and gave me so much space. Then there was Lorenzo. He was exciting, but also reliable. Elvis is my latest. I love him the most. He makes me feel so warm with his heated seats and steering wheel. It might sound strange to love a car and name them, but it's not just me. Almost every Honda Jazz owner stays with the Jazz and buys another. True love starts with a test drive. Honda, the power of dreams.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
This is LBC. Message Daniel Barnett on WhatsApp now. 0345 6060 973.
How many days do you have to register a birth after the birth of a baby in England and Wales? Let's find out.
42 days. Jordan from Hemel Hempstead.
Jordan from Hemel Hempstead, congratulations. You are the winner of this week's LBC Legal Hour quiz. You have 42 days to register a birth in England and Wales. Well done. Another quiz question next week. It's 9:33. You're listening to the LBC Legal Hour with me, Barrister Daniel Barnett. Let's go to Matthew in Camborne. Matthew, good evening.
Hello, good evening. Yes. Now, I've been going through a lot of cancer treatments. I've had three lines of treatment. Now, last year, I had a newly licensed drug, which has resulted in remission, which has held, but my immune system has really collapsed. And that, when I checked my consent form, damage to the immune system was not listed as one of the risks. I was wondering if I do have redress, maybe against the drug manufacturer, particularly as my consultant now says the manufacturer is now actually saying this is a risk.
Okay, thank you for your call, Matthew, and congratulations on being in remission. How long were you undergoing treatment under the first two lines of cancer treatment?
I had six cycles of chemo in 2022. In 23, I relapsed and had four more cycles of chemo and a stem cell transplant. I then relapsed again, and then I had this newly licensed, what's called a targeted therapy, which it works by making your immune system fight the cancer.
Okay. You've reread that consent form, I assume.
I looked at it, and nowhere on it, and I've checked the medical terms on it, nowhere on it does it say damage to the immune system.
Give me some examples of some of the things it did say.
I'd have to go and find it again, but it goes through all the usual ones, such as vomiting, it can say death as well. Yeah, I think it says death as well, and, all sorts of things like that, from the quotes.
Yeah, but presumably it says risk of heart failure?
Yes, I think that's on there.
Yeah, presumably it says risk of distress to the endocrinal system.
I can't remember.
Okay. The reason I'm asking you these things is that is the way the law looks at this, and I've got to be very clinical here, Matthew. I need to disassociate myself from the seriousness of your physical condition, if that's okay. The way the law looks at this is it says, well, let's assume the drug manufacturer was negligent. I'm going to take that as read, okay? I'm going to assume they were negligent in not listing that.
Right.
All right. So let's take that as read. If it had said on the consent form there was a risk of serious damage to your immune system, would you still have signed the form and gone ahead with the treatment? And if the answer to that is yes, you would have still gone ahead with the treatment, then the negligent failure to mention those side effects hasn't actually caused you any loss. Because if it had said that, the same would have happened. And the negligence is in the form not saying that.
Right.
So the way the court will look at it is say, well, you've had two failed courses of chemotherapy and you've had stem cell therapy.
Yeah.
It's the third one. Presumably you're very keen for a cure.
Yeah.
If the consent form had said there is a risk of damage to your immune system, possibly serious damage to your immune system, would you have signed that form anyway, third time round? What would your answer to that be?
Well, in truth, when I was handed the consent form, I was in so much pain, I really didn't know what I was doing. I just said, look, I'll sign it.
Mm. You see, this is the problem. You consented to death. You consented to the risk of death.
Yes.
You consented to the risk of heart failure. You consented to the risk, I suspect, of endocrinal failure, and many, many other things. My gut feeling, and your honesty here, your frankness is confirming this, is that a judge would probably say, if it had said on the form risk of damage to the immune system, you probably would have signed that still and gone ahead with it. In which case, the failure to say it hasn't made a difference. Does that make sense?
Yes.
As a result of which, even if there was negligence, you wouldn't be able to prove it's caused any injury to you. Because without that negligence, if the form had said risk of damage to your immune system, the same would have happened.
Yeah, I get you.
I don't think you've got a claim here, Matthew, as unfair as that sounds.
No, that's why I phoned, just to find out if it's worth spending any precious time in doing that sort of thing.
But look, you've got precious time now, which is what's important. If you want another view, there's an organisation called the Association of Victims of Medical Accidents, which will give you free advice on this. You can go and get a free second opinion if you want.
Sorry, say that.
It's called AVMA, the Association for Victims of Medical Accidents.
Okay.
So you can get a free second opinion from them. I'm pretty confident I'm right, Matthew, but it can't hurt to get a second opinion.
Okay, yeah.
And I wish you all the very best with your recovery.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Matthew. Matthew in Camborne there, what a nice guy, and I'm so glad that the medical prognosis is at least looking good at the moment. It's 9:39, you're listening to the LBC Legal Hour. Let's go to Sean in Bletchlingly. Bletchlingly? I haven't heard of that, Sean. Where is it?
I'm sorry.
Sorry. Welcome. How can I help you?
Thank you, Daniel. I'm only phoning about the £50 purchase, but it's the principle behind the Consumer Rights Act, which I've heard so much about on your programme, emphasising that key terms in consumer contracts, including terms relating to prices, must be both prominent and transparent. I bought quite a large 2.2-metre metal garden arch. The package was delivered. I didn't open it because I was waiting for the gentleman who was going to dig the holes to cement it in. He came the next day. We found we couldn't cement it in because there was builder's rubble. I went back to them straight away and I said, I'm so sorry. It's here. It's completely unopened. I need to send it back. I can't use it. Had a lot of emails backwards and forwards saying that, you know, it's not damaged, therefore, you know, you've got to pay to return it. I paid £50 for the product and I paid £6.99 in postage. I was quite happy to pay £6.99 to return it. But the best that they say they can do for me is to pay £30 to return it.
Okay. Right, so if you return something when there's nothing wrong with it, companies are allowed to charge a reasonable amount to return it, and that's got nothing to do with drawing main terms to your attention. They just are allowed to charge a reasonable amount for return. Is £30 a reasonable amount? I suspect metal, 2.2-metre metal arches require some serious level of delivery.
That's why I can't return it myself.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question to you. If you don't think it's going to cost £30, why don't you get someone else to return it for less than £30?
I can't. The post office don't want anything to do with it. You know, it's just one of those items that it's just not easy to transfer at all.
I completely understand. They're entitled to charge a reasonable amount, and I suspect it probably does cost at least £30 to transport that sort of thing. The fact they did it for £6.99 on the way out to you is that they're taking a hit on the delivery because they make the profit on the sale.
Oh, okay.
But they're within their rights here, Sean. That doesn't sound like an unreasonable transport cost to me, I'm afraid.
Okay, so it's irrelevant that it only costs £50 in the first place, isn't it?
Yeah, totally irrelevant, I'm afraid. Yeah, frustrating, galling, but irrelevant legally.
We're not doing very well tonight, are we?
Well, if everything in life was easy, no one would need to call the LBC Legal Hour. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
Bye. All right, bye-bye. Bye. 9:42. Let's go to Lorraine in Willesden. Lorraine, hi.
Hi, Daniel. I'm finding out it's my daughter. She ordered a pair of trainers online from a shop that has shops on the high road. They were supposedly delivered. Hello?
Hi. Yep, go ahead.
They were supposedly delivered and handed to me, to my daughter, but she wasn't there. She was actually working. She's a teacher. So they sent round the delivery guy to her last week because it was half term, and he said it wasn't her, and she actually recorded their conversation. He said it wasn't her, he didn't know what happened, and that they'd blame him. But he went back to them and actually said it was her that he handed the goods to.
Right, is he claiming to have any photo of handing it over? Because whenever I get something, the delivery driver always takes a photo of my hand with the open door. Not my face, but my hand.
She's supposed to sign for it, and she's asked for a copy of that signature, and she hasn't had it yet, and this has been going on for over a week now.
Okay, so you've got a dodgy courier who's made a mistake and won't fess up to it. It's beyond a shadow of doubt here, Lorraine. It's the retailer and not the courier who's legally responsible for sorting this out. Your contract's with the retailer.
They have refused to refund or exchange for another pair.
Okay, well, then, do you know what's available to you?
What? No.
A court.
Okay.
I mean, it's that simple. It's a binary choice. I say this quite often. You accept what they say or you sue them. And you'll have a solid claim here, because if you sue them, there's no way they'll prove that it was handed to your daughter, because it wasn't. And they have no photographic evidence, and it looks like they've got no signature evidence either, because you've asked for it and they haven't produced it. So, okay. Rock solid claim. How much were the trainers?
£80.
£80. Okay. So, were they paid debit card or credit card?
No, it was paid on online pay in three payments.
Do you mean something like PayPal?
Solana.
Okay, so they might have some sort of dispute resolution service. I'm not familiar with their terms, I'm afraid.
Okay.
So that's also worth looking into. But ultimately, and this is hassle and it'll take time, but although I suspect the retailer will fold quite quickly when they can't prove delivery. If you issue a claim in the small claims court, Lorraine, if your daughter does, it's your daughter who bought them, she needs to issue the claim, she'll win.
Okay, then. Thank you very much, right. Daniel.
Thank you, Lorraine. Thank you for the call. Bye-bye. It's the LBC Legal Hour. You can call 0345 60 60 973 with your legal questions. I'm Barrister Daniel Barnett, and the time is 9:45.
Coming up at 10, Nick Abbott, leading Britain's conversation. Next on LBC.
At EDF, we don't just encourage you to use less electricity, we actually reward you for it. That's why, when you use less during peak times on weekdays, we give you free electricity on Sundays. How you use it is up to you. EDF. Change is in our power. Households who reduce their weekday peak electricity usage by 50% can earn up to 16 hours of free electricity per week, subject to fair usage. For all T's and C's, visit edfenergy.com/r-power.
Ready? Steady! The Toyotathon sale event is on!
Race down to your nearest Toyota centre and save up to an extra £1,000 on a new Toyota. But hurry! Deals must end 31st of May. The Toyotathon sale event is on!
Offer valid on eligible new vehicle orders 1st to 31st of May and registered by 31st of July 2025. Retail customers only. T&Cs apply. See toyota.co.uk for details.
The Red Cross is here to deliver essentials to people who have lost everything in Ukraine.
We are here to support families enduring the food crisis in Somalia.
We're here to shelter earthquake survivors in Turkey and Syria.
We're here for humanity. With your support, the Red Cross has helped millions of people in the UK and 190 other countries. Search British Red Cross to support us. Together, we are the world's emergency responders.
The Legal Hour with Daniel Barnett on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It's the LBC Legal Hour, 9:47. Let's go to Terry in Farnborough. Terry, good evening.
Yeah, good evening, Daniel. Thank you for taking my call. Unfortunately, it's not the most exciting one you're going to deal with tonight, I don't think. But I've been listening to you for a very long time, and you've always said about make a first payment on anything substantial on a credit card. So myself and my family, we've booked a holiday for next year, and it's in the school holiday, so it's quite expensive. During the excitement of booking it, it was in store, in a local, in a high street store, but during the excitement, I paid the deposit with my normal debit card. I've still got 99% of the holiday to pay off. But if I was to make a payment on my credit card, not like I can foresee anything going wrong, but would that still protect me in any way?
That's a great question, Terry. I'm assuming the holiday is more than £100 and less than £30,000, which is the two boundaries.
Yes.
Okay. I am 95% sure yes, it will protect you if you pay part of it on credit card, as long as anything that goes wrong happens after you've paid the bit on credit card. So if, for example, you were told there was a problem with the hotel and then you paid the next bit on credit card, that wouldn't work. The reason I say 95% is because I did read recently about a judge who said exactly the opposite thing, and I think that judge got it wrong.
Oh, okay.
But there is a little bit of doubt about it, Terry, but 95% yes, you're covered.
Superb. Okay. Like I said, I can't foresee anything going wrong, but, I just want to be protected and protect my family, really.
Yeah, good for you. Good for you. And
thank you.
Always get your credit card out first, because if nothing else, you get air miles that way.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't think of that. It's just the excitement, you know, it's all giddy and you know how
don't
it is.
Don't blame you. Where are you going on holiday?
we're going to Kos in Greece, but it's in the summer holidays next year.
That'll be lovely. We'll have a great time.
Thank you so much. And thanks for all the work you do for everyone, yeah?
Thank you for calling in, Terry. Pleasure to speak
all
to you.
All the best.
All the best. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
It's the Terry and Daniel Mutual Admiration Club. It's 9:49. Let's go to Julie in Basildon.
Hello.
Hi, Julie.
Hiya. I had a flight to Jamaica in March, and the flight was had to go back to Jamaica because of the airport in was closed due to the fire, and I was there for another 10 days.
Which fire are you talking about? Are you talking about when Heathrow Airport closed for a day or a couple of days over the weekend? Yep, okay.
Yes, yeah. And so they had to send the flight back to Jamaica, and the next flight was 10 days later.
Sorry, they sent it back to Jamaica. Why didn't they land in Manchester or Birmingham or Paris? How did they have the fuel to get back to Jamaica?
No idea. The flight went back to Jamaica, and I was there for another 10 days.
Okay.
And so, obviously, I had to stay somewhere and eat and everything. And I've been in touch with the airline, and they said that because I don't have printed receipts, I can't claim anything.
Why don't you have the receipts?
The Jamaica don't actually normally give receipts. You buy street foods and things like that. You don't necessarily buy food in restaurants all the time.
What about the hotels? Didn't they?
Yeah, they gave a paper receipt, a handwritten receipt. It was a guest house. And they gave the handwritten receipt, and so I produced all of that information and given them the details of the guest house and given them the details of where I stayed, and they said that it's not a paper, it's not a printed receipt.
Oh, what a bunch of absolute numpties. Airlines can be so difficult when it comes to fulfilling their legal obligations on paying for losses and things like that. And also, why did it take them 10 days to fly you back?
I have no idea, and I had to buy additional data for my phone and everything. And
okay, so you're entitled to all of this, Julie, every single penny of it. There is no law that says that it has to be receipted, although I understand why airlines want to see receipts, because people do try to rip them off. But a paper receipt, a handwritten receipt, is perfectly good enough. If the airline is refusing to pay, I would just bring a claim against the airline. There's not really an ombudsman that deals with this sort of thing, although most airlines will have a, I can't think of the word, the word's gone, a dispute resolution scheme.
Yeah.
Two dispute resolution schemes used by airlines, and if you ask them what their dispute resolution scheme is, they'll tell you, and you can go off to them first of all, and they should order the airline to pay up. Certainly the hotel receipts, paper receipts are good enough. Did you pay on credit card? Did you stump up the payments on credit card or debit card? Is there proof from your bank that the monies were paid?
There's proof of some payments, but not of all. So the guest house was paid by cash, by money that I managed to borrow when I was in Jamaica.
Okay. Yeah.
And I've got some receipts where people sent money to me by transfer.
Yep. Okay. But you will get it all. And unless you've spent an outrageous amount, obviously you are going to incur costs on accommodation. Obviously you're going to incur costs on food. And in the absence of receipts, you're entitled to a reasonable amount. Now, there's room for argument over what's reasonable, but frankly, if you're buying, and I don't say this in a negative way, but just street food as opposed to Michelin star food.
Yeah.
If you're buying just street food, no one's going to quibble about the amount you've spent, because it's just not going to be that expensive.
Yeah, thank
you. So find out who their dispute resolution company is, and if that doesn't work, take them to the small claims court, Julie, and you'll win.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Sometimes I just hate airlines. Detective Irish Paul has texted me, no one gets air miles anymore, look it up. I'm not sure that's right. I get air miles. I get air miles on my American Express card. I love spending money on it because I get flights to America, not very often, but when I can get enough points, off I go to the United States. Woohoo! Go and see some Broadway shows. It's 9:53. John is in Hull. John, good evening.
Hello, Daniel. How are you, sir?
Very well. How can I help you, John?
It's about time you was knighted for your excellent work.
Thank you.
Right. Question. Around about the middle of April, I got quotes from three builders, And I decided to hire this particular builder because his quote was reasonable. The quote was to renovate an outbuilding to the rear of the house. Okay. Now, the builder insisted that I pay him a 10% deposit prior to work commencing at the end of May. And this was in the middle of April. So I paid him a deposit of £1,000 because the work was quoted at £10,000. So I paid him £1,000 a deposit. Now, he did say that he was going to make a start at the latter part of May. May is now coming to an end. I've tried contacting him, but he's not responding. I'm getting a bit concerned, Daniel.
Okay, how did you pay? Cash, card?
Well, I paid by credit card.
Fine. You're covered, which is good news. You continue contacting him. Give him another couple of weeks. Say, have you got his email details or just his phone number, John?
I've got his email. I've texted him. I've emailed him. He's not responding. Okay. I've got a feeling that he's done. I think he's done me over.
I'm sure he has. But you are so covered here, so you don't need to worry about it. We just need to get your ducks lined up in a row. You need to have a written paper trail of using this phrase. You said you were going to start by the end of May. You haven't done so. Time is of the essence. That's the phrase to use. Mm. Time is of the essence.
Mm-hmm.
And I require you to start by, give him 2 weeks, so 15th of June, wherever 2 weeks takes us from Monday. Mm-hmm. If you don't, then I will go elsewhere and require a refund as you'll be in breach of contract. That's what to say. And once the 15th of June has passed, you can get a refund from your credit card company under Section 75 of the Consumer Credit Act, because you're 100% covered for this by them. Well done on paying by credit card.
Thank you very much.
If you just paid cash, like so many people do in this situation, you'd be somewhere without a paddle.
Yeah, I'm a bit fuming, Daniel, because I had faith in this guy, and for him to let me down like this, you know, it is quite disappointing. It does hurt.
Well, I'll tell you what, if there's any good, honest builders in Hull listening, I'm going to ask them to text in, and I'll give the first good, honest builder who says, I'm a good, honest builder, who texts into LBC 84850 a shout-out. And maybe if you're listening, John, you can get in touch with them.
Okay, brilliant.
All right, thank you, John. Good luck with that.
Thank you.
You are legally covered there. Henry in Balham. Henry, good evening. We've only got a minute.
Hi, good evening. So we had a flight for our honeymoon that was delayed. It was a late flight and it got delayed to the next day, which resulted in us missing the connecting flight in South Africa to the safari.
Was this booked as one journey or two?
Say that again, sorry?
Was it booked as one journey or two? Did you buy your ticket from...
Separately. Yeah, it was separate.
Yep.
So they refunded us some of the price for the first flight, however, and put us in a hotel, but however, they didn't give us obviously any money back for the next flight, and we obviously lost a night in the hotel, the other side as well, the safari.
Yep.
So we lost a night at safari, a night... We had to pay for a night in South Africa too.
Okay, so do you have any right to compensation, is your question?
Yeah, precisely.
You are probably entitled to a very small amount as compensation for the delay. And we're talking it's about £600 or £700 each. If they were at fault in the flight cancellation, if it was beyond their control, you don't get that. But what you won't get is the cost of any additional flight costs, any cost of wasted night at the hotel, or anything for distress at losing the first night of your honeymoon, I'm afraid, Henry.
Yeah.
Because when you book it as two separate flights, you don't have that level of protection. That's what insurance is there for. Did you have insurance? Because you might have a travel insurance.
I have travel insurance through my bank account.
That's something I was going to ask if that's
worth pursuing.
It's definitely worth pursuing. It's going to depend on the terms of the policy, but the chances are you're going to be covered there.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Henry. Yeah, cheers. Definitely. Insurance always puts you in a much, much, much stronger position. Thank you, everybody, for your calls and your texts and your WhatsApp this evening. Thank you to Sam, Mark, Shiloh, Nigel, Gabby, Matthew, Gavin, Sean, Lorraine, Terry, Julie, John, and just then Henry. And I'm back next Saturday at 9 o'clock. A reminder, The advice offered in this hour is for your guidance only. You should always seek your own independent legal advice. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on both Global Player and the new LBC app, where you can read and watch the latest from LBC, put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at one, it's Clive Bull, but now it's time for Nick Abbott.
Thank you, Daniel. The richest retailer in the land is having to cut staff hours because the evil Labour government is being mean to it by insisting that its staff get a wage they could actually live on. You know, enough money to do their weekly shop in the shop they work in all week. In other news, people who are creating artificial intelligence are telling us that their invention will change the world. They're also telling us that it will shortly mean our mass unemployment and will be hunted for sport by the robots they're making. And the old debate about legalising it has come up again as another commission's report goes up in smoke. That and more with me, Nick Abbott, after the new news at 10 on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock. President Trump's special envoy to the Middle East has condemned a response from Hamas to his proposals for a ceasefire in Gaza. Steve Witkoff says the amendments it's put forward, including a complete Israeli withdrawal from the territory, are totally unacceptable and would only move things backwards. The organization also says it's prepared to free 10 Israelis.